Welcome back. It's a Saturday, the 14th day of May, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And let's take a look back at a week where, thankfully, we haven't yet had nuclear war, but certainly we had just about everything else but, especially when it comes to blatant corruption and the kind of rot that destroys entire societies. So where, oh, where to begin? How about the crime capital of the Rust Belt, the gun-free killing zone of Chicago?
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Well, you may never find a more wretched scumbag of a mayor, anyway. And she's outdone herself today, doing the kind of thing that, if anybody with actual integrity had tried it, they'd be locked up facing trial already for insurrection. Oh, and yeah, some of them, having done nowhere near as much, are still in jail, facing charges of, well, in some cases, they don't even really know. Anyway, disgusting Chicago Mayor Lori Light and the Loafers Lightfoot has issued a, quote, call to arms, says Tyler Durden summary for Zero Hedge, in response to that leaked ruling from the Supreme Court, which might, if the left fails in their attempt to coerce or outright destroy enough justices to stop them, is evidently urging violence, implying that the Supreme Court will no doubt come for, quote, LGBTQ plus so-called rights next. Here's her comment from Tuesday morning. To my friends in the LGBTQ plus community, the Supreme Court is coming for us next. This moment has to be a call to arms, she wrote in a Monday tweet, adding, we will not surrender our rights without a fight. A fight to victory. So, as just about everybody with half a brain is noting, citizens arming themselves up in Chicago to protect themselves against the gun-toting criminal thugs that run that city, well, that's bad. But if you're politically correct and have the right sexual orientation, those people arming themselves up against a bad Supreme Court in an actual insurrection is good. And you know what? At this point, your host has to speculate a bit. Imagine if fetuses came out of the womb armed. I don't think we'd have ever had either a Roe v. Wade or a Lori Lightfoot. But obviously, it's been true since the dawn of humanity. Since they don't, they have to rely on their parents to know better and to protect them. I think we're seeing the consequences of a really nasty failure there. Tweeted Michael Quinn Sullivan, publisher of the Texas Scorecard, if this isn't a call to insurrection, well then, what is? Another pundit wrote, you'd think she'd be more concerned with her crime-riddled city, but here she is gaslighting and inciting. And the answer is, if you've been paying attention, you knew darn well she could care less about crime in her cesspool of a city. And Matt Walsh added, not satisfied with the murders just in her own city, Mayor Lightfoot is now calling for more violence across the country. Marjorie Taylor Greene wrote, call to arms? Are you declaring an insurrection, civil war? What's wrong with you? Your city has the highest murder rate in the U.S. with the strictest gun control laws. Now you're making things up and calling for war? Well, she said, not a good idea, noting correctly that her party is the party of violence. And, perhaps not surprising, famous but left-leaning law professor Jonathan Turley also sees through this one, observing correctly that the Lightfoot comments, quote, only highlight the double standard applied by Democrats over free speech. Whether it is, quote, disinformation or violent speech, the Democrats have often excluded themselves from such standards. What is insurrectionary language for some is advocacy language for others. The alternative is to fight like hell, he said, for free speech. For everyone. And that, of course, did not endear him at all to the radical Bolshevik revolutionary left. And just one final comment here, folks. Note that you're not hearing any calls from high-profile leftist Democrats for her resignation over this outright inflammatory, downright violent, insurrectionary language. But that, at least, speaks volumes in a land where free speech is being rapidly outlawed.
And just to put an exclamation point on that, there's this from Jim Hoft in the Gateway Pundit. Pure evil, says another headline. The Biden Department of Just Us is now threatening January 6 defendants, those who aren't actually pushing insurrection, like the mayor of Chicago, with life in prison after they dared to walk inside the U.S. Capitol and take pictures. On January 6, 2021, it says several members of the Oath Keepers marched up the U.S. Capitol steps, stood in a line, and sang the national anthem, along with tens of thousands of patriots outside the building. Several members of the Oath Keepers, who were in Washington, District of Criminals only, to provide protection for speakers at the several organized protests taking place that week, walked into the U.S. Capitol and were seen taking pictures inside the building. And now it says the Biden Department of Justice, SICK, under the direction of a scumbag named Matthew Graves, U.S. Attorney for the District of Criminals, are threatening those very same men with life in prison. Julie Kelly reported on the atrocious development for American greatness, saying in a letter obtained by that organization, the U.S. DOJ is threatening defendants charged with seditious conspiracy in the sprawling Oath Keepers case to accept plea deals or face life in prison. In a letter dated May 2, they said, we write to advise you of applicable penalties that could apply upon conviction at what they laughably call a trial, said Graves' chief prosecutor in the case, Catherine Rakoczy, detailing the hefty prison sentences and fines associated with other offenses charged in the case. She turned to potential sentences for seditious conspiracy, a crime so rare that federal sentencing guidelines don't even cover it, saying the United States now takes the position that the most analogous offense to seditious conspiracy is treason. And if a jury concludes the conspiracy involved conduct that is tantamount to waging war against the United States, the lawyer explained, the government could seek a life sentence upon conviction. Notably, none of the Oath Keepers are accused of carrying or using any weapons on January 6th. None is charged with directly vandalizing government property. And it's not even clear that any of them actually even forced entry, but seem to have been invited in by nearby police through open doors. I guess, folks, what this proves is that there's seditious conspiracy, and there's the mayor of Chicago. From there, I'm going to introduce a new segment today. I've got to call Isn't It Funny That? And we'll start with this story, courtesy of theactivistpost.com, about how the Department of, yeah, you know the name, Aktung Homeland Security has coordinated with who else? A Chinese drone company to create the first totally surveilled city in America. Chula Vista, where else? People's Republic of California and the Communist Chinese beachhead on the left coast. Inside San Diego's metro area, it says, the second largest city, home to some 275,000 residents, they've made the history books. Chula Vista hasn't cured cancer or discovered perpetual energy. Instead, their mark on history will be kind of dark, writes Matt Agarist, as they become the first city in America to become completely monitored by spy drones. Then he quotes Brian Hofer, executive director of the Oakland-based privacy advocacy group Secure Justice, to say, on a per capita basis, they're probably either the or one of the most surveilled cities in the country. Pretty much the minute you walk outside your front door and move about your daily life, you're going to be tagged and tracked by some law enforcement agency, even though you've likely never been suspected of any wrongdoing. Chula Vista's drone program didn't come about or to fruition overnight. Instead, the Department of Aktung Homeland Security and other government agencies coordinated with Chinese drone manufacturers and unscrupulous big tech actors to have implemented the program over the course of several years. The City of San Diego's Homeland Security Department is collaborating with more than 20 regional organizations to implement IPP. And the partners include the City of Chula Vista, CAPE, AirMap, Qualcomm, AT&T, California Governor's Military Council, the California Governor's Aktung Office of Business and Economic Development. That's kind of funny coming from a communist regime, isn't it? Uber, UC San Diego Health, Intel, GE Ventures, and others, they said, actually as far back as 2018. And even the company who manufactures the drones, the piece says later on, had no problem admitting the very Orwellian nature of their program. We saw it in China, we're probably going to see it around the world, using drones with cameras and loudspeakers to fly around and see people are gathering or doing what they shouldn't be. Well, anyway, they said it seems a little Orwellian, but this could save lives. Unquote. And so does abortion, if you believe the idiots that are willing to trade their essential liberties for not even a temporary bit of security. And they'll exert their choices over other people's bodies even before they're born. And given that the Biden regime is intent on pushing the world into World War III, this is kind of an interesting take as well. Peace says that on top of the disturbing Orwellian nature of the program, there's also this problem, a major one as it turns out, with the data from the drones. Such a large one, in fact, that the Pentagon won't touch them. Whoa, now think about that, folks. This is the same Pentagon that's willing to kill American Marines, soldiers, and sailors by mandating the Zyklon B injection. So what does that tell you? In 2017, and I remember doing this story. Oh, and there you go. That was before the current level of treason. The Department of Defense flagged the DJI drones over security concerns, stating that DJI science and technology is providing U.S. critical infrastructure and law enforcement data to the Communist Chinese Party government. People don't realize, says Jim Lewis, a researcher at the D.C.-based Bipartisan Center for Strategic and International Studies, the depths of Chinese espionage and the fact that they're willing to use any opportunity. We face the biggest espionage battle we've ever had with China. The way people engage in espionage has changed. It's moved largely to technology and digital services. And it's not enough that people are letting Two Facebook literally intrude on every aspect of theirs and their neighbors' lives, along with Gulag, Alexis, Apple, Siri, and you name it. Now we have license plate scanners and surveillance cameras, and the Communist Chinese are providing all of this for Big Brother and laughing all the way to the bank and to the next world war. Here's another one, same series. Isn't it funny that PayPal is now seizing accounts owned by independent media outlets? No surprise here. The piece is from Ethan Huff, and he tells us what literally we've known for quite a while anyway. It's the nature of the public-private fascist partnership. Anyway, he says if you do any kind of business through PayPal, if you haven't already, you probably now might want to reconsider, because the big tech platform is reportedly seizing accounts and threatening to steal cash from people and companies that dare to question the government. And if you think about it, the new Ministry of Truth just makes that branch of the new Gestapo that much more powerful. Consortium News and Mint Press, the story says, both learned this the hard way recently after PayPal deleted their accounts. Both of them received a message stating, "You can't use PayPal anymore," along with this bit of BS. Quote, "At PayPal, we value a safer community for our customers to do business. Achtung, and you are not one of them anymore." Back to the story. "We noticed activity in your account that's inconsistent with our user agreement, and therefore we can no longer offer you PayPal services." And the letter went on to explain that any associated bank and credit card details can no longer be removed or added, and that any money in the account, quote, "will be held for up to 180 days, after which, just maybe, they might allow you to withdraw any remaining money from your PayPal account," unquote. That is, if they don't decide to keep it anyway for damages. And as the piece says, unless you want that money stolen from you, probably you better flee this particular fascist public-private partner, along with as many others as you can think of, and there are fewer and fewer remaining alternatives, as soon as possible. Investigative journalist Matt Taibbi has written a thoughtful piece on this subject, noting that Consortium regularly covered the Julian Assange case, which may have put them on the wrong side of the leftist public-private partners here. They're one of the few news outlets to offer sympathy rather than condemnation, and writes Taibbi, "The site had content disrupted by platforms like Facebook before, but now its pockets are being picked in addition. This episode," he says, "ups the ante, again, on the content moderation movement toward the world hinted at in response to the Canadian trucker protests, where having the wrong opinions can result in your money being frozen or seized." And this, he said, is especially true in the alternative media world, where money has long been notoriously tight, and the loss of a few thousand dollars here or there can have a major effect on a site, a podcast, or a paper. Whereupon he concluded that going after cash is a big jump from simply deleting speech, with a much bigger chilling effect. And that, of course, folks, is the whole point of fascism writ large. And finally, isn't it funny that even the Daily Mail is reporting on this one now? Every American carnivore's worst nightmare, they say. Thousands have developed an allergy to meat. The claim is that it's due to tick bites, sparking an immune system disorder. Immune system disorder. Now that hundreds of millions have taken the poison poke, are we going to see more and more of that? Yeah, isn't it funny that now they're talking about this thing called alpha-gal, or alpha-gal syndrome, named after a carbohydrate found in all non-human or non-ape mammals, as well as, importantly, in ticks, which can lead to the alpha-gal allergy, meaning that the person with this particular immune system disorder
can no longer eat meat. Doing so causes an outbreak, with the symptoms ranging from mild to potentially fatal. People have described everything from anaphylaxis to diarrhea, vomiting, or breakouts of hives. And some folks are even so allergic to meat after acquiring this particular immune system disorder that even fumes from nearby meat cooking can trigger reactions. The Center for Death and Control, and we can trust them, can't we, says that AGS, as it's being called, may be triggered by the bite of the lone star tick in the United States, primarily in the Southeast. But other kinds of ticks, or maybe other things, folks, have not been ruled out. Other tick species have been connected with the development of AGS in other countries, and I can't help but wonder, wonder if Fauci knows about this, or maybe gain-of-function folks are playing some kind of a not yet disclosed, and probably not during your lifetime's role here, too. Yeah, isn't it funny that we don't hear about things like this until it's too late? And I can't help but think it one more time. Isn't it funny that this immune system disorder, having to do with not being able to eat meat anymore, comes right on the heels of so many really high-profile people who want you to have immune systems disorders, and they want to inject you by mandate, too, to make sure. Not wanting you to be allowed to eat meat either. They'd prefer you have the bioprotein substitutes or just maybe eat bugs instead. Or maybe not eat anything at all. But that's part of the death cult now, writ large, isn't it? From there, we'll continue on to the middle of the week with another segment I'm going to call Tell Me Something I Didn't Know. And even though that implies a lot of these things are certainly something we've heard about before, what's interesting to me is that while they mostly have been denied by the waste stream, not only are they now being confirmed, but the information that's coming out really does add something to our understanding as well. So let's start in Europe, where the first story comes out of Germany, and researchers at Charité Berlin, Germany's top hospital and one of the largest in Europe, which has announced a, I hope you're sitting down, yeah, tell me something I didn't know, high rate of COVID-19 so-called vaccination side effects lasting months or longer. This based on a survey of about 40,000 Germans. They estimate serious side effects from the poison poke, and remember, folks, this is only so far at least, meaning these are short-term effects as opposed to longer-term things, at a rate of 8 serious side effects per 1,000 people that have been duped into taking the poison poke. That compares to what the Paul Ehrlich Institute, or PEI, Germany's so-called vaccine watchdog, estimated at a tiny fraction of that, 0.2 per 1,000, which means all of this equates to an underreporting factor of about 40 to 1. They note this is about the same as the VAERS URF, estimated by Steve Kirsch quite a while ago. The study's lead researcher, Dr. Harold Mathis, estimated that 500,000 Germans, based on this data, have now experienced serious side effects following the not vaccination. And survey findings indicate that about 80% of the people with severe reactions eventually recover within 3 to 6 months, but for at least 20%, the symptoms persist. And it doesn't say in here how many of those symptoms turn out to persist for however long the victim manages to hang on. All of this, though, says the piece is a major embarrassment for the PEI, which has maintained all along that it's doing a thorough tracking, yeah, sure, of vaccine adverse events, and they're still denouncing as anti-vaxxers anyone who dares to question the bogus official numbers. By the way, Children's Health Defense, in their coverage, says this story is huge, even though you're not going to get that if you listen to the criminally negligent waste stream media networks. It's akin, they suggest, to researchers at Harvard Medical School coming forward and admitting that the Centers for Death and Control, or CDC, had been undercounting the serious adverse event rate by a factor of 40. The vaccine injury is real, and the vaccine injured actually need to be taken seriously and treated as opposed to ignored and hidden. Oh, yeah, and there's this. Doctors, the kind that actually do care about patients and the injuries that they're causing, need to be able to voice their opinions openly without fear of retribution. Now, there's a shocking concept. Hey, if that was actually to happen, folks, that would be telling us something we really didn't know. Hey, tell me something else I didn't know. Well, in America, Bidenflation is still hotter than a Texas heat wave. After March's surge in consumer prices, says Zero Hedge's coverage, analyst consensus is that CPI has peaked. Yeah, sure. April was expected to show a big slowdown from 8.5% year over year to only a ridiculously high 8.1% year over year. However, CPI still printed a lot hotter than expected, 8.3% year over year. And remember, folks, these are bogus official government figures. And bear in mind, they note that headline CPI is still at its second highest level since 1982. Core CPI was expected to rise 6.0% year over year in April, down from March, but instead rose a hotter than expected 6.2% year over year, and that 0.6% month over month spike in core inflation is bigger than all 67 estimates in the BBG Business Survey. So none of the so-called experts saw this one coming. Obviously, they've been listening too much to Jen Psaki, who would at least like you to believe they weren't all jonesing for this one from the get-go. The story goes on to say the biggest contributors to the blazing inflation were indexes for shelter, food, airline fares, and new vehicles, while the indices for medical care, recreation, and household furnishings and operations all also increased in April. Here they note are some of the stunning record price increases, starting with the home index, which rose a full 10.8% over the last 12 months, the largest increase since November of 1980. But if you really want to see inflation, folks, take a look at food. The index for meats, which they don't even want you to have anymore, poultry, fish, and eggs, increased 14.3% over the last year. That's the largest 12 months increase since May of 1979. And airline fares, too, continue to rise sharply, up almost 19% in April, the largest one-month increase since the inception of the series, all the way back in 1963 during the Kennedy administration, when a lot of the airlines weren't even flying jets yet. Oh, yeah, and perhaps most worrying, notes Zero Hedge for the average Joe, real wages fell now for the 13th straight month. Item, and this one isn't the least bit surprising in the tell me something I don't know category, but it is particularly disgusting. Lindsey Graham is a lying scumbag. Oh, wait a second. That's your host's take on it. Here's the headline from the Daily Mail. Lindsey Graham is heard on tape praising Joe Biden as the best person to lead the country. Oh, yeah, he'll bring us together in a new audio while he was waiting, hidden out in a secure location during the so-called January 6th insurrection. The audio comes from an interview taken on January 6th in the bunker by New York Times reporters Jonathan Martin and Alex Burns, actually aired on CNN, in which the rhino Benedict Arnold can be heard telling the reporters, well, actually come out of this thing stronger because, and he saw this as some kind of a great reset, saying it'll take a while, but people will calm down. I guess that means once they realized the country was dead already and the sellout was over before it even started, right, Lindsey? And then he goes on to praise the senile communist Chinese puppet masquerading as president, saying he'll be maybe the best person to have, right? I mean, how mad can you get at Joe Biden? Hey, how mad can you get at Joe Stalin?
We'll actually come out of this thing stronger. Moments like this reset. It'll take a while. People will calm down. I don't want to be associated with that. This is a group within a group. And what this does, it will be a rallying effect for a while where the country says we're better than this.
And Biden will help that, right?
Yeah, totally. He'll be maybe the best person to have, right? I mean, how mad can you get at Joe Biden?
How mad can you get at a traitor like Lindsey Graham? And here's the question, folks. As we're already seeing, what difference would it make anyway? It's not like your vote matters, or as we've seen over and over again, like all of these people aren't playing for the same traitorous insurrectionist team. Yeah, tell me something I really didn't already know. One more in the tell me something I didn't know category, and interestingly enough, most of the coverage on this one seems to be missing the real story. Nothing short of a miracle, for example, says the Daily Mail, the incredible moment, and they have the video, that a passenger who's never sat behind the controls of an actual airplane before, en route to see his pregnant wife, landed at a Florida runway after the pilot literally slumped over out cold, or completely incoherent anyway, at the controls. And it turns out in this case, since it was a single-engine Cessna 208 Caravan flying from the Bahamas to Florida, it was a solo pilot, and that makes it a bit harder to cover something like this up, especially when it's so spectacular. Fortunately, it was nice weather, good VFR and a long runway. The passenger turned emergency pilot remained incredibly calm, and with the help of an air traffic controller, who also turned out to be a high-time certified flight instructor with a lot of experience in Cessnas, the landing came off nicely. He didn't actually know how to shut the plane down once it was all over, but still, everything came out fine. When it comes to tell me something I don't know, they're not going to tell us. The pilot, says the single reference in the piece, who remained unconscious and was taken to the hospital as a result of a sudden but unknown illness, and, yeah, his condition, too, remains unknown. Everything that's important seems to be unknown. like whether or not this guy, like so many other pilots, was forced to take the Zyklon B injection and then managed to pass out, this time actually behind the controls of an airplane in flight? That too is unknown, but your host will suggest you can probably hazard a guess, and the odds would be in your favor to guess correctly. Yes, it's nice a passenger remained calm and conscious and alive and did a good job. But in this case, folks, when it comes to tell me something I don't know, it doesn't seem that they're even remotely about to. We'll keep on trying, though, and we'll pick it up right there when we get back after the bottom of our break. Welcome back now to the second segment for the show tonight. This is Mark Hall, and as we turn to the latter part of the week, it's time to talk financial collapse revealed. The Daily Mail headline is representative. The cryptocurrency bubble, it says, burst. But is it a sign of a stock market crash yet to come? Digital investors are losing fortunes. Ethereum has shed 20% of its value in 24 hours. Luna dropped 98%. And Coinbase is warning that customers may lose, brace yourselves, all your money. Bitcoin, too, has plunged over 11% as investors suffer heavy losses. And traditional tech stocks, it says, are faring even worse. Amazon has lost 30% of its value in just 1 month now of trading. And as of early afternoon trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down about 250 points. S&P 500 and NASDAQ have similar percentage losses. But your host will suggest, again, up front, that something more, bigger, and even a bit different is going on today. The Pablumai story does give us a bit of a clue why so-called investors are starting to panic now. Digital currencies, says the Daily Mail piece, are plunging in value as a so-called crypto winter has now cost investors billions and is fueling fears that it's the harbinger of a wider stock market crash. The world's second largest cryptocurrency, Ethereum, has joined the crash, plummeting in value by 20% over the last 24 hours in the digital downturn that's hammering investors who bought during the COVID years. And cryptocurrencies, in case you don't know, it says, are a form of digital money, and there's a term your host doesn't like in this context, folks. They're not money, they're currency, maybe. Anyway, they use mathematics to create a unique piece of code that customers think they are investing in. Bitcoin was the original digital currency, started back in 2009. The point was to bypass central banks, and an increasing number of offshoot currencies have been founded in recent years, as well as the digital art called non-fungible tokens, or NFTs. Still, all have been decreasing sharply in value over the past couple of days, including one of them that's lost 98% of its value as fears for the global economy spread, and investors are starting to panic and sell off what are called risky assets, meaning that more than $200 billion has been wiped off the cryptocurrency market today alone. Many amateur investors, the Daily Mail helpfully explains, took to buying stocks and digital currencies during the COVID pandemic, and they made what they thought was money because values were generally rising in a bear market. But number two, Ethereum, has now lost more than half its value this year. Bitcoin has shed a third of its value since January, and Luna has had 98% of its value wiped out overnight, with suicide hotlines pinned to the currency's Reddit page as a result. All right, for a minute now, let's pause at that point, take a look at the bigger picture, and see if it didn't make more sense when we come back in. Here from Breitbart, a story I think might help to shed some light on the situation, the Biden regime has ceased all oil and gas leases to Alaska's Cook Inlet and the Gulf of Mexico as of Wednesday night. The goal, of course, is to destroy the entire economy, starting with oil and, of course, diesel, which is the backbone of literally everything that moves by rail or truck or sea or air. And not to mention anything that gets planted or harvested. A spokesperson from the Department of Interior said on Wednesday that the Cook Inlet lease sale would not proceed due to What? Insufficient industry interest. Meanwhile, the planned sale of two leases in the Gulf of Mexico aren't going to proceed either due to contradictory court rulings on the leases, according to The Hill. And you may recall that when this fake president first took over the Oval Office in 2021, first thing he did was sign an executive order freezing all new oil and gas leasing on federal lands. They dynamited some pipelines, too, of course. It was originally struck down by Judge James Kane, a Trump appointee. But meanwhile, things have been kind of murky, if you will, in the legal sense, while energy prices, certainly no surprise here, have skyrocketed as planned in conjunction with record inflation during the Biden regime meltdown years. According to the WAPO, the average price for a gallon of gas rose to a record high, average $4.37 a gallon on Wednesday, the highest price ever recorded since AAA began keeping track of the climb back at the turn of the millennium. And the Post actually said this. Listen carefully and try not to laugh. This is not the most expensive gas on record, they say, when adjusted for the record inflation. But the increase comes despite. No, folks, that's a whopper. Biden's ordering the use of 1 million barrels per day from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve over a month ago, said the WAPO. The point, folks, is the Biden regime took advantage of their inflation spike to dump as much oil as they could out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve so that it wouldn't be available for the reason it was actually originally put there. From there, I'm going to go briefly to a Shadow Stats update. This is John Williams' site, and he tracks inflation the real way, the old-fashioned way, noting that primarily reflecting that one-time drop in gasoline prices, albeit brief and hardly even a flash in the pan, yesterday's inflation numbers, due to that massive flushing of strategic petroleum reserves, appeared, at least briefly, to notch lower for both the April 2022 headline CPI numbers as well as Shadow Stats' alternative, which were still, though, at respective 40 and 75-year high levels. In other words, they dumped as much oil as they could out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in order to, briefly at least, try to hide the massive and continuing inflation. From there, a quick, I guess you could call it an aside, but it's really kind of revealing anyway. This comes from Hal Turner's radio show, who says, hey, we found the baby formula. The Biden regime sent it all to the southern border for illegal alien babies. And they've got side-by-side pictures showing empty American store shelves and then the contrasting pictures from the border. For over a week, it says there have been widespread and growing reports of baby formula shortages all over the USA. Store shelves are bare in many places, and now we know why. The Biden regime grabbed the formula and sent it to the southern border to accommodate illegal aliens coming into the country with their replacement babies. And isn't that funny, folks? If you think about it, they really prefer American babies to be aborted anyway. Then they have the pictures. Here's what people are seeing in American supermarkets. But hey, here's what's piling up at U.S. southern border facilities. Says Congresswoman Pat Kamak, pallets upon pallets of baby formula are deluging the southern border. This first photo, she tweets, from this morning is at the Ursula Processing Center at the U.S. border where shelves are packed. The second, right here from home. And here's a contrasting picture of what America looks like. Bottom line, American babies that don't have mommies with adequate breast milk may go hungry, but illegal alien babies and other invaders, of course, are being fed at taxpayer expense, with food literally being taken out of the mouths of American babies to feed their replacements. This is yet another example of what the illegitimate fake president is doing, continues the story, to deliberately destroy what's left of the country. And before we get back to the crypto meltdown, we've got one more update from the hyperinflation to come front. After yesterday's hotter than expected CPI or consumer price inflation numbers, analysts expected, says Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, that the U.S. producer price inflation or PPI might slow modestly in April, but oh, not to be. Just like CPI, PPI also rose more than expected at 11% year over year, and that's up a full 0.5% even month over month. Core CPI to missed expectations, rising 0.4% month over month and up 8.8% year over year. And says the conclusion of the piece, the data suggests that persistent inflation, there's a term we're going to get used to, in the production pipeline will continue to filter or trickle down through to consumer prices, which rose, as you may recall, in April by more than forecast, driven by categories of things, well, Americans don't really need anymore anyway, like shelter, food, and of course, airfare and new vehicles. Producers are likely to continue facing higher costs As the Biden regime attempt to foment World War III continues to strain food and other supply chains, and all of this adds to the probability that these expenses, what else, will be passed on to consumers somewhere down the line. The Biden Fuhrer on Wednesday, or maybe it was his dementia devil, traveled to Chicago to deliver remarks to the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers annual conference, where he talked about inflation and food supply shortages and how their plans are coming together so well on both of those counts. And out of the blue, maybe it was the blue haze of dementia, suggests TGP's coverage, Biden began shouting about those food shortages, obviously caused by lockdowns in socialist leftist cesspools during the COVID pandemic. Yeah, it's characteristically more or less incoherent, but there is at least something to pay attention to here.
Remember those long lines you'd see in a television? People lining up in all kinds of vehicles just to get a box of food in their trunk. How quickly we forget. People were hurting. And what did the MAGA crowd want to do? Forget it. Forget it. God, this is the United States of America. The idea that people would have to wait in line an hour, hour and a half to get a box of food in their trunk. It's just unbelievable.
You peons, once we're done, you'll be lucky to get a can of food. And oh yeah, if your socialist credit score doesn't match what our disinformation czarina says you had better have, I can guarantee you won't get any food. We intend you to starve. So now, back to cryptos, where we'll start with some comments from Nicholas Gordon via Fortune magazine, who says that hidden away in Coinbase Global's disappointing, to put it mildly, first quarter earnings report, in which the U.S.'s largest cryptocurrency exchange reported a quarterly loss of almost $500 million, well, $430 million to be more precise, and a 19% drop in monthly users, is an update on the risk of using Coinbase's service that may come as a surprise, no, some might even say shock, to its millions of users. One of the problems with the cryptocurrencies, folks, is that it's not real easy to do it yourself. Unlike something like gold or silver that you can hold in your hot little hands, not only do you have to have the power grid to run the web and a communications network to allow you to know whether or not what you've got is worth anything, you have to have some kind of an exchange broker or agency to perform the calculations and make the transfers. And in the event that the crypto exchange goes bankrupt, says Coinbase, so sorry. Users might end up losing all of the cryptocurrency stored in their accounts along with it. Coinbase said in its earnings report Tuesday that it holds $256 billion in both fiat currencies and cryptos on behalf of its customers. Yet the exchange noted that in the event it ever declared bankruptcy, quote, the crypto assets we hold in custody on behalf of our customers could be subject to bankruptcy proceedings. And there was a shocker that seems to have put a little bit of a ripple in the market. Coinbase users would become general unsecured creditors. And you know what, folks? Isn't it funny? That's exactly what Big Brother's banksters do to you, too, when they decide to go bankrupt and, yeah, steal what you thought was your money, but it really wasn't when you put it on account. Account holders, and this seems to be kind of a general principle, are in fact unsecured creditors, not owners of anything. Anyway, this means that they have no right to claim any specific property from the exchange in proceedings, and the funds would become, say it with me, inaccessible. Which, says Fortune, shouldn't happen. An individual's ownership of cryptos is supposed to be immutable and absolute. That's one of the key selling points touted by blockchain evangelists everywhere. But when a user creates a Coinbase account, they often end up storing their cryptos in a wallet controlled by Coinbase, which means the individual is giving away at least part of their control over what they thought were their own funds. And it tells us access to a crypto wallet is governed by a private key, which is a long string of characters that effectively acts as a password. Without the key, the cryptocurrency in the wallet can't be accessed. And on Coinbase, the exchange holds the private key and lets users, how nice of them, access the funds within the wallet using a more convenient password. The setup makes it easier, at least while it lasts, for users to enter their accounts by remembering an easier password. Yet, it also means that when push comes to shove, and guess what? We're getting there. Coinbase ultimately governs whether a user gets access to those assets or not. But in comments shared on Twitter, Coinbase CEO and founder Brian Armstrong said, no, not to worry your pretty little heads. The exchange had no risk of bankruptcy. That's a quote. And that the disclosure was made due to new rules set by who else? Those that run the fiat money markets, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. And if they ever lied to you, why next you'd be telling me you don't trust the FDA or the ATF either. Anyway, yes, the SEC not only makes sure that the financial markets are honest and completely trustworthy, like gold and silver paper trading, for example, they also make these rules, certainly for your protection, regarding public companies that hold crypto assets on behalf of others. Which inclines your host to hearken back to something I heard from a good friend, who's unfortunately now passed on, but ran a major physical gold and silver company. If you don't have it and can't hold it in your own hands when you need it, you don't own it. And he used to tell a story, too, I thought was particularly revealing. Imagine you're at your home and a burglar breaks into your bedroom in the wee hours of the morning. So you reach for your pistol in the nightstand next to your bed, where you find the deposit receipt saying, yes, you own it, and it's downtown at the Coinbase wallet or in a bank vault. So, yeah, you grab that piece of paper and you wave it at the intruder and you scream, I've got a gun! Somewhere. And I always did think that kind of made the point. If you can't lay your hands on it when you really, really need it, it doesn't matter whether you think you own it or not. Fortune goes on to say that Coinbase does offer what they call a self-custody wallet in which users know their private key. And at least technically, a crypto wallet is not required to trade crypto on Coinbase, but by admitting that crypto assets aren't really secure in the event of a bankruptcy, however unlikely they might say it is, Coinbase is also highlighting a major difference between storing funds with blockchain exchanges, or, for maybe a better example, keeping them in the form of physical gold and silver, versus keeping cash, or what's now called cash, it really isn't, with traditional banksters, banks. Because yes, they remind us, and so we're told, the FDIC protects deposits, if you trust them, up to $250,000 fiat dollars, which, by the time you realize just exactly what's going on, might be about the equivalent of a Big Mac and fries, if you're lucky. Nicholas Gordon's piece in Forbes concludes by saying that Coinbase shares fell 15.6% in after-hours trading after the earnings release, dragging the crypto exchange stock price down to 80% below its NASDAQ debut in April of 2021. Besides reporting a declining user base and lower-than-expected revenue, trading volume on the Coinbase exchange declined from just over $500 billion to $309 billion in the first quarter over the same period last year, and Coinbase warned that trading volume was likely to decline still further in the current quarter. And one more observation at this point from the Daily Mail crypto collapse piece, which tells us that during the pandemic, record low interest rates intending to boost economies, yeah sure, led to investors buying riskier assets, trying to find some positive return. Things like cryptocurrency that provided, at least on paper, higher rates of return. But as skyrocketing inflation leads to a rise in interest rates, in order, they claim, and listen to this whopper, to safeguard your savings, these assets are now being sold in favor of, oh get this, safer government bonds, which provide better returns, even folks, if it turns out that they're actually negative interest rates, since the returns that they provide, guess what, will not match the inflation that they're going to pretty much guarantee. Which was, of course, taking us full circle, part of the reason people were lured into the cryptos to begin with. Yeah, they may not quite be fiat, even if there's really nothing backing them up except a bit of mathematics, as long as the web is up anyway, but they're not really controlled or tracked by Big Brother either. Yeah, sure. Now, at this point, there's one more aspect of the crypto collapse that I think really needs to be explored in at least a bit of detail so that we understand the entire picture here. So for that, we go back to Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, which says, in an update, that the crypto carnage continued as the stablecoin crisis, now there's another one of these key crypto words, has now spread to Tether. Yeah, it reminds us, the market cap of the world's cryptocurrencies crashed over $200 billion overnight, back below 1.5 trillion fiat bucks, the lowest since July of 2021 at the height of the booga booga flu hysteria, and almost 50% down from its $3 trillion highs in November of that same year. Most of the market loss is coming from the majors like Bitcoin and Ethereum. Notably, Ethereum is dramatically underperforming Bitcoin today as DeFi fears build. But the turmoil is focused on the fact that crypto's first and largest dollar-pegged stablecoin called Tether lost its peg, and that's key, amid mounting redemption pressure. In other words,
show me the money.
Show me the money! That's it, brother! But you got to yell that shit! Show me the money! I need to feel you, Jerry! Show me the money! Jerry, you better yell! Show me the money!
But amid what might be increasing doubts on that score, Tether USDT, the world's largest stablecoin, dropped 5%, at least briefly on Thursday, falling as low as 0.95 fiat bucks. The stablecoin has recovered some, but is still trading below one fiat buck at 98 cents, according to data from CoinMarketCap. Since it has a market cap of more than 81 billion fiat bucks, Paolo Arduino, CTO of Tether and Bitfinex, shared with Decrypt via email that the volatility was what he called pure market dynamics, having to do with things like arbitragers buying USDT cheap on Kraken, selling it on Bitfinex for profit. But he claimed all of this arbitrage is pure market dynamics, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the value of Tether, which continues to hold its peg. Still, volatility and the price action in Tether comes amid a tumultuous week for the industry following the implosion of Terra's stablecoin, UST, and a steep 10% drop from market leader Bitcoin. Once the third largest stablecoin, UST first depegged by just a few pennies last weekend. But since then, the collapse has been monumental. It briefly fell as low as 29.98 pennies, a 71% decline from its dollar peg on May 11th of this year. And the coin currently trades at just 62 pennies, or 0.62 fiat bucks, according to data also from CoinMarketCap. Now, I'll try to avoid all the real inside baseball here, folks, but understanding Tether's tether, says the piece, is very important because USDT and UST are two different types of stablecoins. UST is an algorithmic stablecoin controlled by smart contracts, and USDT is backed by Tether's reserves, where an equivalent amount of assets deposited into Tether and vice versa supposedly help to maintain the peg. According to the transparency report from Tether, the assets include cash, or whatever that means nowadays, corporate bonds, commercial paper, and other assets. Not only secured loans, but things like other digital tokens. But the trouble is, of late, the redemptions for these digital dollars have reportedly been high. Over the past 24 hours, more than $300 million of USDT have been redeemed, a process of converting USDT to cash dollars, or American fiat, according to Tether's CTO, Paolo Arduino. And during redemptions, a dollar from the reserves is sent to the user, and USDT is removed from the token's supply. So, the story says, Cointelegraph reached out to Arduino to ascertain if there's any cause for concern about USDT's ability to maintain its $1.00 peg in light of these recent events, whereupon the CTO stressed that USDT has maintained its stability through multiple black swan events. Seems like we've had a lot of black swans lately, doesn't it? And highly volatile market conditions, and has never refused redemptions. Well, at least not yet. Now here, folks, your host can't help but go back and look at history. Remember when the U.S. dollar was allegedly as good as gold? They had never refused redemptions either, trading a dollar either for silver, oops, that ended in 1965, or if you were a foreign bankster anyway, or a foreign country, maybe even trading dollars for gold, up until Tricky Dick Nixon on August 15th of 1971 decided, not going to do that anymore, so sorry, you can't even take it to the bank, hardy har. And as they say, the rest is fiat history. And that history, folks, shows that no fiat currency in all of human history has ever survived long term. And so far, the dollar has reached the age of 51 since that fateful day, and does appear to be really, really long in the tooth, kind of doddering and tottering, like the criminal imposter in the White House, come to think of it. The Zero Hedge summary says that the ongoing Terra, or Luna, versus UST situation may well have dented confidence in stablecoins and their respective platforms' ability to redeem token swaps for their supposed 1.00 fiat dollar peg.
I like this quote. Maybe this is a good way to start to wrap up with FUD, or fear, uncertainty, and doubt, at levels reminiscent of the 2018 Bitcoin market crash. Arduino offered perspective given the technical difficulties between USDT and algorithmic stablecoins, and said the following: unlike these algorithmic stablecoins, Tether holds a strong, conservative, and liquid portfolio that consists of, and listen carefully to this, cash and cash equivalents, such as short-term treasury bills, money market funds, and commercial paper holdings from A2 and above rated issuers, unquote. And gee, do you notice anything suspiciously missing from that list, folks? Oh yeah, not even paper gold, for crying out, certainly not the real stuff that have been money since the dawn of written human history. Real gold, and better still, real silver, which, back when we had a constitution, at least, or thought we did, was supposed to be all that the United States Congress was allowed to mint, not print, into actual real money. And gee, how far we've come, and yep, how far we have fallen since then. One last observation before the music comes up today, folks, and that is that you would think, given all of the fear, uncertainty, and doubt in the various fake currencies and cryptocurrencies and other substitutes for the real thing, that you might have thought on Thursday that the real alternatives, honest money like gold and silver, would explode upwards. Which is clearly why, in spite of hyperinflation literally bursting out everywhere else, the one thing that Big Brother is actually not gonna let happen is real money to reveal the real truth. No wonder the crooks went into overdrive and kept selling stuff they know they can't deliver anyway. And there's a real message there, too.